The following podcast is a presentation of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
So there's, if anybody didn't get them, there's a couple handouts up here. There's a course listing that has the summer and fall IP courses and communication fall courses. There's a list of the various adjuncts and kind of their descriptions. And this is for the IP Gender Conference, and this is the flyer for the summer IP sessions. So there's concentrated sessions in June on international intellectual property. We'll discuss each of those, but if you're missing anything, you can.
Hi guys. I'm Mike Carroll. I'm the director of the Program on Information Justice and Intellectual Property. John Flynn is our associate director. And I'm glad to see some of you here to learn about this fun and interesting area of law and how to study it. So let me just get a sense of folks in the audience. How many 1Ls are here? I know some of them. Any 2Ls? Okay, good. So you're all in the planning for the rest of your law school career. So let me say one thing in general. Even though I'm a big advocate of all of our classes, I think it's in your interest to treat your JD degree like a general degree and make sure that you, as you plan your courses, cover the really basic courses that touch on lots of areas of law. So for instance, in addition to your required courses, I would make a course like administrative law. Just treat that as a must-take because it just touches on so many areas of law. Business organizations, most of the wealth in the world is tied up in some kind of corporate form. Understanding the basic structure of that will form lots of different kinds of law practice. So I assume that you probably already have that in mind, but I will actually introduce that as the way you approach people in class. Sadly, if that is your approach, it leaves the number of sort of electives as a fairly small set. Fairly small, but still big enough to explore a lot of different things. So, the areas of intellectual property and communications law, I would strongly urge that you at least sample one of our classes, lots of different reasons. One is our areas of law have become more general, especially with the internet, and more economically important with these things. Think you like a business lawyer of some sort. I don't think you can responsibly not take an IP class because so much of business now touches on IP one way or another. And what is IP? It's generally sort of four branches of law that have gotten coupled under this umbrella. So it's patents that deal largely with invention. But invention now gets defined very broadly, so any innovative process is an invention. So it might surprise you to learn that Goldman Sachs, for example, has a large patent in the patent department because a derivatives trading contract is a patentable process. And patent law is now interacting with climate change and climate change negotiations, and people are saying, how are we going to get access to green technologies? So patent law sort of deals with that field. Copyright deals with kind of the creative outputs, so anything that's an original work of authorship, from your Hollywood blockbuster movie to your emails. Believe it or not, your emails are copyrighted works of authorship. So copyright gets its hands into anything that any embodiment of the creative process, even a small creative process. Trademarks regulate brand names, any signs of commercial identity. So trademarks are an important part of any business enterprise, and can also get themselves into areas where people criticize companies. trade secrets are not studied as much because they're almost like a kind of commercial tort law. It's when you create anything from a customer list to a secret formula, and then it gets misappropriated, usually by a former employee. So it's you may touch upon it in some employment law cases as well. And for those who usually remember covenants not to compete in contracts, trade secrets are often one of the things that are behind those covenants. You can't walk out the door and take the secret and then compete with your former employees. So those four are kind of the core branches of law that people mean when they're saying intellectual property. But it's really growing now so that people want to take those concepts and map it onto lots of other kinds of resources. So there are questions about traditional knowledge in developing countries. Should the people who've known something for all these years and now that knowledge has economic value get paid? And if so, what's the means for negotiating that payment? Should the property paradigm be the way that we regulate traditional knowledge? Access to genetic resources, access to biological resources, are similarly being debated as within a kind of IP frame because they go into the medicine side. And then on the medicine side, Sean will speak more about, there is sort of a human rights discourse around the right to health and the right to access to medicine. And so IP has to learn how to interact with these other fields of law, whether it's human rights, international trade. And part of what we try to do with our approach to the subject matter is take a broad view that recognizes these interactions and trains you to be able to operate in a complex legal environment where you can't just know more about one set of problems. So that's kind of the basics framework for the area. The only other thing I'll throw in is I teach a couple of classes that are focused on the role or the impact that the internet's having on the legal system. So I teach a class in the fall called Cyber Law that doesn't fit neatly into any kind of bucket. Cyber law is primarily concerned with broad questions that have some internet-specific reaction from the legal system. I don't do a lot of IP, but I do some of the jurisdictional questions which come up in any IP litigation around the internet, and it's often IP cases which give rise to the jurisdictional questions. And then in the spring, I do intellectual property in cyberspace, which is predominantly a copyright trademark on the internet. So if you look at your sort of choices, the basic copyright class with Professor Yazzie is a wonderful introduction to that field. I should also put in another pitch for our area. It's fun to study IP. If you study copyright, then you're reading cases about movies that you've seen, that you've heard. You're studying trademark, you know all these brand names, right? But like you get in cases about the luxury goods makers, and you get to read about Mattel suing the band Aqua for the song Barbie Girl, right? And that means you get to play it in class and everything. So our area is fun. It's also growing. There are jobs in our area because more and more companies have been, and clients find that they've got these IP issues. They keep them popping up out of the woodwork. They don't want IP issues, but the IP issues force themselves upon them. So there's a sort of incentive, a career incentive for taking these fun classes as well. The only other thing I'll say is that we also, I think one of the distinctive offerings that we have is the international angle. Intellectual property has become the subject of a basic trade treaty. The World Trade Organization has a piece on IP called TRIPS. And all the treating nations basically have agreed that they have to have an IP system. The IP system has to have certain minimum elements in it. And so there's a whole sort of trade side to IP that's emerging, and we offer a lot of opportunities to study that. And in that regard, I would say, if you look at summer classes, this is new for us. We've expanded our summer offerings, and we've attracted some really great So we can't promise. It's an experiment. We're testing the market to see how interested you guys are in taking IB classes in the summer. But let me just say that the offerings we have this summer are great, and take a serious look at whether you fit that into your schedule, because I can't promise we're going to have those folks back next summer. And I haven't talked about the clinic, because I just need to read that word.
Which is why I apologize. I'm Vicki Holmes, and I teach at the IC clinic and teach communications law, and I'm in the middle of negotiating a settlement and a copyright litigation with the vast right-wing conspiracy. It's very fun, but it's fast-moving and unpredictable and interdisciplinary as well. It's crazy. It's politics. It's copyright. It's civil procedure, but I guess so. I'll start with the IP clinic. I mean, the IP clinic is pick our students for next year. We have all 3Ls, so it's listed on this list for fall, but it's an application process that happens in March, and has concluded. And sometimes we've been able to fit in 2Ls, but this year, because of the oversubscribed numbers, we had to take all 3Ls because the school's goal was that everybody be able to take the clinic, so we also always get preference. So the clinic started, gosh, we have 10th year, and really it started as this wonderful opportunity that Peter Yazzie, who teaches the basic copyright class, and Christine Farley, who teaches the basic trademark class, saw to sort of marry their activism in intellectual property efforts with what our highly ranked clinical program has been doing for 25 years. And they got a wonderful grant from a professor at Berkeley and her husband, Ben Samuelson, Bob Glushko, to start this clinic 10 years ago. And what in those 10 years we've done is really just what Ms. just said. We have gotten clients, whether they're individual inventors from Anacostia or filmmakers from Brooklyn or nonprofit entities run out of basements at Hayden Park, to big NGO activist groups, Library Association, AARP, clients that didn't really have necessarily access to pro bono services. We have been able to sort of give them legal services in the IP area, which is really sort of the unique thing in sort of pro bono circles and in clinical circles. We were really one of the first IP clinics, our sister clinic out at Law Technology Clinic out at Berkeley, funded also by these two wonderful people. And now they're nearly 15, probably, in the 10 years we've been in existence, so we sort of started a movement. And it's been just really fun because we take a really diverse array of cases, and just as Professor Carroll said, they walk in the door as unidentifiable. They don't necessarily follow the doctrinal lines of those books. They have tons of different issues. And that's sort of the goal of clinic, is to give blind client contact. So it's been a really fun thing to do. Dual trademark applications, full on fair use, copyright issues, privacy issues, filmmakers who are trying to, let's say, go to Sundance Film Festival or get a distribution deal. And we file amicus briefs in the Supreme Court on behalf of the NGOs. So we really do, I think, one of the broadest portfolios out there, whether it's this area or the forums we're in. It's really quite front thing, and it changes every year. And we do some litigation, so this is a great litigation now. And it's really a fun opportunity. So I assume most of you are 1Ls. So you know, something to really consider for next year. It's quite fun, and it puts into practice not only these classes, but civil procedure, ethics, all the classes that, you know, you've been studying in the past have been boiled down to a static paragraph. You have these clients who are evolving facts that change over time, and they don't tell you everything at first. So it's sort of an extraordinary opportunity to do that, to go into practice in sort of idealized supervisor.
What do you mean?
So that's sort of the IP clinic. And I guess check on that communications.
Yes.
The communications, the IP communications counseling, I don't know how many of you are interested in that, but it's sort of, to me, is so inherently related to the IP field. You know, if IP involves the content, communications law really focuses on the pipes, that the various pipes that get the content to us, whether it's broadcast, whether it's the phone line, whether it's broadband, whether it's satellites, and all the regulatory layers that govern that. It's a fast and changing, and there's a massive decision on the internet, the broadband plan, net neutrality. You guys probably took all that just this week in the jurisdictional issue that really it's hard for us to keep up current on. So what we offer, and it's, they're not listed in here, and I teach a communications law survey that I teach in the fall that's listed here in the IP courses. And I would say that my class is more of a communications law class, and I'll give you a couple other classes that are sort of pure communications law, because I do a survey that's sort of a convergence to, because the reality of the marketplace today is everything is converging with people who are media players are now cell phone players, and it's really hard to regulate the silos anymore. Like the old days, you sort of knew who a broadcaster was, who a cable company was, who new entrants into wireless service are. But as you guys know, we all now sort of carry it around with us. Everything is a wireless device, and everything's changing directions, whereas our television used to be over the air, but it never moved. Our phones were wired, but now everything's flipped in probably a more sensible way. We walk around with our phones, they're wireless, and a lot of us, most of us, get television from the service provider, get it over a wired situation. So it's sort of been a fun evolution, but it's, my class really looks at it in a very interdisciplinary, non-service specific way. But there is also a mass media law class that Professor Barona teaches that's offered in the spring. That's really just sort of mass media law with a little more of the print media stuff in there. There's a telecommunications law seminar that looks at really more common carrier wireline, the history of AT&T and stuff like that. And there's an international telecommunications law seminar that really looks at international trade agreements and the satellite process and stuff like that. And there are also numerous students do externships at the FCC. So the externship seminar opportunity, people have really done stuff on the Hill and the NTIA, executive agency, and spectrum management, FCC, and various other agencies related to this area. The other courses that are useful, and I think, I don't know if some of them are on here, entertainment law, of course, sort of the content if you're working for a media company, my Professor Carroll's cyber law class, IP cyberspace class, the IP class is copyright trademark. There's an advanced copyright seminar that Rob Kasunik teaches on those sort of advanced notions of fair use. All really important things. And the other classes that I would say for this area are really important are First Amendment. Professor Mastin teaches a First Amendment class, administrative law, largely administrative processes governed this area of law, and antitrust law, increasingly important in this area. And then, you know, classes are great, but there are also activities in this area that really. And same with the intellectual property program. There's a media and communications law society that I urge you guys all to join if you haven't already and you're interested in this area, because they put on some great events, and it's a really good chance to connect with alums and network with people. We have a lot of alums that are in this area in the city, and it's a real tight network of people. There's also a local bar association, federal communications bar association. A really great resource to be able to network through, because it's very small, it's mostly here in D.C., and it's an evolving door of people who come in and out of government. And we just had an event with them last week here on job searching stuff. the ABA Communications Law Moot Court competition. Our students this year won the national competition. They won Best Brief, Best Oralist, they won the competition. So it would be nice to sort of put someone back into that competition again. And, you know, in this economy, the internships in this area have been invaluable at sequencing people onto the job openings, whether it's at the FCC or on the Hill, because so often that resume that comes in from someone who's been someone's intern is, you know, sort of viewed as a known quantity, and it's often the reason people have jobs. And it's not at that agency or in that Hill office, it's often with the person they've worked with in that office who's moved to Comcast or so it's been working that way, especially in Little Mine. And then there's just a lot of great work in this area, great associations, stations, companies. There's a lot of that work in this area.
If I can jump in on this point, if you think you want to practice in Washington, understand that communications law is a field that where there's a much bigger market for communications lawyers in D.C. than there are in most other markets. So you're in the Hollywood for communications law because the FCC is here. And so if you talk to friends at other law schools and they may say, that's because maybe there's a small practice doing radio stations and buying each other kind of stuff. But here, you're in the regulatory department, and there's going to be a lot of work because this case we talked about, the statute is way out of date, it's way out of step with this technology, which means either the FCC or Congress is going to have to update it, and that's full employment for lawyers, because now you've got to interpret the new statute, apply it to the new government.
I was sent at this career thing by the FCB.
Obviously pursue your interests, but if your interests remain open and undefined, understand that this is treated as a small niche in most other places. It should not be treated as such a small niche in D.C. because of this provision that we're going.
Yeah, and increasingly, the interest in IP and the background in IP is more and more important because of copyright protection technology and things like this. The whole digital television conversion really is only because of years of HD movies being uploaded off the internet before they came out. So it goes hand in hand, more so than I started practicing. It's going to be very distinct areas of law firms, and now I think
So I'll just back a little coming up, try to point out a couple resources to go to and probably the resources. So on the internships, I just spoke at a panel of incoming people thinking about how they're coming here, and you know, one of the things I told them is, Why should you think about a school in D.C.? Like, one of the reasons is because you go out and get those experiences during the year. You don't have just the summers to get your experiential learning. During the semesters, maybe internships and get credit, et cetera. So remember why you came to D.C. and start thinking about it now. You know, what semesters do you want to get your experiential learning opportunity? And one thing to even envision is, like, I even instruct people, like, think about, like, writing your resume, how it's going to look when you're going on the market in a couple years. Like, what are the chips that you want to notch on your belt, and what are the experiences that you have? So think about what you want your resume to look like, not just what it is now. And then start thinking about going out and getting those experiences now. One great thing that I try to invite people to is to go get experience in some law-making organization. And as you learn, courses like admin law, the lawmaking function exists in all three branches of government. So the branches, communications law, et cetera, a PTO or copyright office if you're doing IP, but also you have Congress here, you have judges, and you can work for judges as an extern holder. So don't just think about doing a clerkship when you graduate, perhaps think about doing one either as a summer or during the year. So think about trying to get at least one of those all three. But you know, one of the things that can make you a better lawyer and more marketable is to have some experience in the forums that as a lawyer you'll eventually be trying to advocate for. So even if you want to do it on private practice, think about getting some of that public experience so that you know how those organizations work. So that's one plug. So resources to find that, on the PGIT website, there's two main portions of it. One is resources for students. There's a couple pictures at the top, 8 of us. So there's a resources for students section. If you go to that, it has material and curriculum, including this handout that you just had that I forgot, that lists all the kind of courses that are related to intellectual property. So if you're thinking about, you have them broken down into core courses and supplemental courses and other courses. So there's some advice, which Vicky was talking about thinking about patent law and There's also a whole section on externships and public interest and government placements that has 100 different offices in so that can help you plan out that part of your curriculum. I want to put in another plug for the summer courses. So your L1L is your first opportunity to concentrate in intellectual property. It's a seminar that a lot of it's actually in June, so we're teaching a 2-week intensive course, well, a set of courses all on international intellectual property law. And as Michael noted, with this, these are not promising these people are going to be back every year. But the rest of them, we have, so the IP trade course is being taught by Daniel Gervais, who literally wrote the book on the history of the WTO TRIPS agreement. He's, I have been the foremost scholar on the TRIPS agreement in the world. He's going to be here teaching a concentrated 1-week short course on the TRIPS agreement. And no matter whether you're ever going to do any international intellectual property, knowing the TRIPS agreement is pretty much a must. So now intellectual property is not just regulated at the national level, it's regulated at the international level. So even if you're in a domestic law practice, that's the one agreement. So I strongly recommend that. And it's also a great introduction to just all the policy issues in intellectual property generally. Studying kind of the global minimum norm, so that's the core intellectual property. Then there's also a course by Jeremy Kabir on intellectual property and sustainable development, focusing on climate change and interaction there. And both of those courses, I've just been looking, and there's a lot of subscribers going into them. So if you're thinking about those courses, think about registering soon. Just make sure that you get a place.
If I can just say, they're both Canadian, which means by definition they're nice. Really are really nice guys.
There's also a longer course, which is an evening course on intellectual property licensing agreements, which is pretty the last few years. And it's also taught by someone. And then I'm teaching a course on intellectual property and access to medicines. It's really focused on kind of how do you achieve access to medicines in third world countries, developing countries, and we'll probably have a fair number of people from developing countries in this course. It's a course that I usually only teach in developing countries. So this is the first time that we've taught at WCL. All of these are kind of trials. And then the final plug is if you're thinking about your writing requirement, that's what you kind of think ahead for is which courses offer opportunities to your writing requirement. You can always do this in impact study. I think, so my course, I teach it in the fall, an intellectual property and human rights course, which is kind of a broad discussion of IP development issues from public access to medicines, their traditional knowledge, cultural expressions, et cetera. But we do a whole bunch of workshops on how to write a publishable paper. And in the past 3 years, I've always had about a third of people in the class get their paper published. So I think it's a successful course for getting a paper published. You can do it on any topic, the material, the substantive material in the course is at the intersection of humanities law and intellectual property. But basically, any kind of international intellectual property topic is fair game.
My major exam,
paperless, okay.
The Broad-Cassidics Advanced Copyright is the seminar. And then we're open to independent study proposals, so.
So that's, I think we're open to, so that's writing, that's internships, that's summer, that's both of the fields, that's all. IP Society, so Ali is here. Raise your hand if you're not a member of the IP Society. That's another way to get great information on that. So we kind of use the IP Society as like our student list, so we don't have a please join the IP Society. We consider that part of that. There's also an IP MOOC course. And the intellectual property MOOC core team also won this year there. It was the regional, the finals of them, the Bishop's first place in the regional. And I was helping coach them. And it's so clear that you get such an amazing education and experience doing that. It forces you to read all those parts of the cases that you in the law school classes. And really, you have to force yourself to make arguments, et cetera. So if you have any interest, you actually write I was so impressed with the team this year, all the people who helped them, a lot of them are society people. They just so clearly knew the topics that you
need to do. And I usually call it with a patent work. That's usually an entertainment law, sometimes a trademark, but also a helpful IP opportunity. Every year it changes a little bit in the population.
I have some questions about courses. About like, does it matter? Are there some that have prerequisites? Like, and are they all taught like only every fall or only every spring? Planning time and stuff.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think the courses I talked about copyright's a fall course, trademark is a fall course. Cyber law is a fall course, IP, cyberspace is a spring course, entertainment law is a fall course, advanced copyright is a spring course,
patent is a spring course.
I think First Amendment, admin law, and antitrust are taught each semester, sort of those good to have related courses. Communications law is a fall, mass media is spring, telecom seminars is spring, international telecom is spring. Those are pretty stable in terms of their placement.
Just whether anything's a prerequisite for anything else. Anything we should definitely take 2L versus 3L?
We try to minimize the number of classes to be prereqs. I think advanced copyright means copyright.
I'm not sure that's true.
Taking people, if you couldn't fit copyright in, we have that students who take
it. I think the international and comparative pathway is applicable. I mean, you want to take the basic courses first anyway, because they are the basic courses for a reason. But
if you take an intro, that should probably be
I think that satisfies
you. Take an intro to IP. And then even if you haven't, again, just ask. Because most classes are taught only this semester, that's why it's really great to not expect to apply it now and actually start up. Because you only really get two shots this year, master, to take each course. If that's a prerequisite, then I get one shot. So for Pat, for instance, since Pat's taught in spring, Pat has stuck in your third year, or talk to the person, or take an IP.
What I like about this mention when we got a student with this issue this year is that the IP clinic and trademark conflict. So if you're interested in taking the trademark and thinking about the IP clinic.
Well, we're going to work with the registrar to try to minimize those conflicts, but
I would say
we can't promise that there won't be any.
Trademark 2L here if you want to do it. I don't know that it's going to change.
Yeah.
Mr. Kell, could you give a quick survey on the cyber law course? In addition to jurisdictional questions, is there going to be discussions of content regulation? And given the D.C. Circuit's decision, is there going to be talk now about, you know, broadband standards and net neutrality in that class?
But yeah, I do. So it's a survey. Basically, the way that I conceive of it is it's a survey of a range of issues that where there's an internet component, where the internet's doing some work in the development of the law. So net neutrality, there's a class on net neutrality, there's a class. And the way I've organized it is to try to, you can almost think of it as the first year in cyberspace. It's like you get to revisit your first year law classes, but now see, oh, I thought I knew the law on this, but oops, the internet, they changed the law. So in torts, for instance, defamation liability, there's a special rule that applies to internet service providers. So you learn, you know, why did Congress do that? What's going on here? Why is the internet causing the law? So there will be something on torts, property, virtual property. We did a class on virtual property. A sword in the World of Warcraft is actually a very valuable asset, but what is it? So I try to squeeze as much value out of that class as possible, so it actually functions as a bar review class, because you have to be reminded of what you learned in the first year in order to now say, ooh, that there's something different. Yeah, we have fun. But let me say one other thing, because I know from those of you who I taught as well in contracts that some of you already know you're interested in patent law, you have the technical background. But I want to make sure that those of you who don't have the technical background don't fall for the, ooh, you need one to study IP. Okay? So first of all, you have to understand sociology of the field. Patent lawyers for a long time said what we do is really intellectual property. And what those copyright trademark people do is like soft IP. No fault for that. Okay. Copyrights and trademarks. Yeah, absolutely. No, there is a culture of patent law that had, you know, there were firms that were only patent lawyers, law firms, and they held on to the practice because it was a lucrative practice. And so they were happy to scare away anyone who might want to enter the community. So there's a kind of a patent law, ooh, scary, a complex technology. You don't want to do that. But the truth is that large general practice firms have now swallowed most of the patent reasons. The most patent litigation is staffed by both someone with some technical expertise and general litigation skills. And even the people with technical expertise, if you're a chemist and you're litigating a biological invention, in what way does your chemistry degree make you better suited to litigate this case? Anyone who has an aptitude for learning the complex facts can do patent law. You just have to be willing to learn the facts. The only exception to that is if you want to write patents. If you want to write patents, you have to become a member of the bar of the patent and trademark office. And to take the patent bar, you have to have a minimum number of undergraduate hours in the sciences. So there is a truth to it, but it's for that piece of the field, and that's one piece of a really broad field.
How many people are taking the final IP course?
You guys have fun?
Yeah.
Yeah, right? It's fun stuff. What are you working on right now?
We just did the Barbie case.
Okay. All right. Did she play the song?
Last year, 2 years ago, Kaczynski did that lecture.
Well, he did the fair use lecture, right, Judge Kaczynski. Oh, did he really? Oh, when he gave the... Oh, that's great. He's a character. He writes a very funny opinion in the cyber law class about the value of domain names. So basically, there was the domain name sex.com. So one guy basically tricked the register and said, oh no, don't point that domain name at their website, point it at my website. in Canada getting all this internet traffic and making millions of dollars. And then the other guy sues on a tort theory of conversion, that you converted my property. And the legal question is whether they'll hang you. The subject of a conversion action, is it really property? And Kaczynski starts the opinion registering the name sex.com. Might make some money. Who the fuck? There's $60 million that could get staked in the case. Okay, you guys got that spring look. I am so ready for something. Us too. Us on the side of the table. Well, we're going to have a great one. All right, well, obviously, as you do in the planning, feel free to follow up. It's really fun. Check the necessary box.
Thanks for any questions.